This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future.
Today we have with us
Chris Greasy.
And I'm Stuart Burks. In the last episode, you were just talking about when you had, was it the Governor General and his wife?
And family.
Mm-hmm. Going out fishing, and you had a couple of awkward incidents there.
Yes.
So you thought you were fired. Yeah.
Quite often when we're alongside, and they were up and where they were staying, the Governor General's car would come down and stop on the wharf beside us, and the chauffeur would climb out and yell out down to us, "Are you there?" One of us would poke our head out, and he'd open up the boot, pull out a crate of beer with the compliments of the Gov, hand down a crate of beer.
Okay. So he was quite different in attitude to his wife.
Well, he appeared to be,
But
no, he was very easy to get along with. And after about a week, one of his sons, he had two sons, the elder of the two, hauled up his line. "Would one of you mind baiting my hook for me?" And the Governor General turned around and looked at him and said, "Get up off your bloody arse and bait the bloody thing yourself." 10 points to the Governor General.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So so that son rapidly learned how.
Fair enough.
And then after the Waitangi Waitangi Day came along, and there was one of the Navy warships had come up and anchored out of Waitangi, and we virtually became a transporter of VIPs from sort of Russell Mapaia over to Waitangi and back again, sort of thing. And then the naval officer in charge, Auckland, happened to start his fortnightly holiday with his family. So we spent 2 weeks taking them out fishing.
Yeah.
Much easier.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. This was a Navy ship, and its main role at that time was taking dignitaries out fishing.
Dignitaries.
Mind you, who
was the Commander-in-Chief of the Royal New Zealand Navy at that time?
Governor-General?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Representing the monarchy, of course.
Yes. Yeah.
And when the Commander-in-Chief says, "Take me and my family out fishing."
Yeah.
What are we supposed to do?
Mm. Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah.
That was one of my very most pleasant times in the Navy.
And after that, outside those times, what were you doing?
When we left that time to go back to Auckland, it'd been blowing a real gale in the Bay of Islands. Mm. But the skipper, our skipper, decided that just calm enough for us to get out past Cape Breton, come down the coast back to Auckland. The best helmsman that we had on board our ship was a young bloke who was the electrician. He was the electrical mechanic. The skipper put him on the wheel, and then we went out to Cape Breton. It took us 1.5 hours at full speed to get out to Cape Brett. We got out there, skipper took one look at the waves outside Cape Brett and thought, "No way can we get through this." So he very carefully, with the aid of the helmsman, turned the boat around, because turning a 72 foot boat and brought on waves like that was a very dangerous manoeuvre. Yeah. But we got it. He got it turned around and then left it up to the electrical mechanic to get us back in. Once again we went at full speed. An hour and a half to get out of Cape Breton. Three quarters of an hour to get back to Russell Port. So we stayed there for another couple of days and until it did get quiet enough. The waves did get quiet enough. But one of the reasons why the skipper was not too fussed about not leaving at that time was because he had met a young woman in Russell. And yes, the action of the on some of the waves on the with a small vessel like that. But I wasn't 100% happy with it. And the skipper decided that to send me to the Naval Hospital in Auckland for a checkup. And they came back with a report not suitable for sea service in motor launches.
That was because of seasickness? Or?
No, it's just
generally.
Yeah, and I was not happy about that. Won't look a bit. I wanted to stay on that. But I got then posted to the Canary. Yeah, the Canary, and getting back to the Marco, at one stage, I wanted to talk to Jan. And of course, she's at home in Mainai and in Lower Hutt, and the only telephone was through the Russell Telephone Exchange. And I thought, well, I'll go across there and see how I can do this.
You were so just married then? No children?
No.
Okay, yeah.
No, I wasn't even engaged.
Oh, right. Okay.
Just. And I went across the telephone exchange, and so happened that the postmaster himself was there. And he looked at me and said, "You're off the Marco, aren't you?" He says, "Well, go back to the Marco and then phone here." I said, "Why?" He said, "Shut up and do it." So I thought, who am I to argue? Picked up the telephone. And he answered the telephone and said, "Okay, now what's the phone number?" I gave him the phone number because I think he went through a couple of different exchanges to get from Russell down to Lower Hutt. And Jan and I spoke for nearly half an hour and never paid a penny for it. That's why he told me to give it.
Yes.
Because I bet somehow or other it went on the ships down not. Not mine, because this was 1959. In fact, it was the beginning of 1960. Yeah, the Canary wasn't, sort of doing a little bit of sea training, etc., mainly around the Hauraki Gulf. We did go across to Sydney once, and up to Rockhampton, I think it was. No, it might have been Newcastle. I can't really remember. We also did a trip up to Fiji and escorted a motor launch that the Fijians were using back to Auckland. Exactly the same type of motor launches as the Marco. And the Fijians had called it the Viti, V-I-T-I. So we put a crew on board the VT and brought her back to New Zealand. And every day the VT had to come alongside the Canary for supplies, etc. But it was not a calm sea at all, all the way back from Suva to Auckland.
How long did it take?
For a few days.
Yeah.
But at times, when the VT was just not very far astern of us at all you could see is the top of a mast. That's how high the waves were. And when she came alongside, she'd come alongside, and then there'd be another unexpected wave, and I'd go bang!
Yeah.
Hit each other. Bounce off. Made a hell of a noise. And here we got it back to Auckland. Okay.
So how were things transferred from the one ship to the other in those sorts of
things? As it came alongside.
You just throw it straight onto the deck. Because there was wasn't it, from ship to ship you'd sort of have a line and you could but then it was just too rough for that, was it?
Too rough for that.
Yeah.
Considering that went when the Fiji crashed into the Canary.
Yeah, yeah.
Where was the line?
Yeah, yeah. It just
When it went out, the line wasn't long enough, it would have.
Yeah, oh, it just so dramatic. Yep.
Yeah.
So for people in the Navy then, you say you had some sort of long trips to different places, but others were just very close in. Were people in the Navy for the time in the ships or for the places they go?
No, they were in the Navy for a set period.
Their motivation for being in the Navy, was it because they wanted to spend time on ships or they wanted to go to other countries? Or?
Various motivations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Various.
And yours was?
Because I wanted to join the Navy. Because my grandfather had been in the Navy for about 24 years.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the stories he told me, and I was in the Secret Corps before I joined the Navy.
Yeah.
I was still at school, and I loved it in the Secret Corps.
Just the lifestyle.
I think it was also because the Secret Corps virtually ran on the same lines as the Navy, etc. That was just in my blood.
Yeah.
That was me.
The thing too. So, moving on then.
Okay, from Canary, I did a pre-promotional type course, which virtually meant I could be promoted to provisional leading telegraphist, which meant I was not qualified as a leading telegraphist, but I still got promoted up to the leading telegraphist level. And then not very long afterwards, I was posted back to the Royalist.
Mm-hmm.
By this time it was, before we get on to the posting to the Royalist, so the Canary went up to the Bay of Islands, as a guard ship sort of thing for Waitangi again.
Mm-hmm.
And the bridge going across the river sort of thing up to Waitangi, Waitangi grounds, was a one-way bridge. And before you got to the bridge you had the Marae on the left. Now everybody on Waitangi Day was going to Waitangi. So they decided we'll have five people to control the traffic. And as at the time I was a provisional leading telegraphist, I had the authority on my arm to be in charge. So they put me in charge. And then just about straight away, they had to take one of my four people away from me. So that left me short-handed. So I had one person that was having a spell sort of thing, one person at one end of the bridge, and me at the other end, doing what I suppose was supposed to be doing. I had a portable radio strapped around my waist, and etc. And I was in communications with the bloke at the other end. And what we did was controlled the traffic going across the bridge. And it was an extremely hot day. And at times there'd be a car going across the bridge, sort of virtually in front of me. The window would go down, somebody would hand out a glass of beer.
Oh, yeah.
Very much against regulations.
Yeah, yeah.
But and I had no one to leave me, so I had to stay there for the whole time, right from 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock in the morning, through to, well, after everything had sort of packed up and on the Waitangi grounds for the day. But controlling that traffic was, you'd be standing there watching the traffic, and you'd have one lane stopped while the other lane came across in front of you.
Yeah.
And you'd be looking down, and there'd be a car coming out of that traffic towards you. You'd think, what the hell is it they doing? Then you'd get a bit closer, and then you'd realise it was an official car of some sort that had to get across the bridge. So once again, that interrupted the flow of traffic both ways while you got rid of the official car. And then we just packed up in the evening. It's getting starting to get dark. And a boat came in from the guard ship to pick up all us bridge controllers, or whatever you like to call us. But just as it came in, somebody came rushing across me, because at the south end of the bridge there was a gravel road going off to the left, and somebody came rushing off that and said to me, there's somebody just been run over down here. The hell am I supposed to do? Because I had the only possible communications to any sort of medical assistance. So I managed to get hold of the Royalists, and they were going to send somebody over to have a look. In the meantime, I had to go up by this bloke that had been run over, and I just stood there watching him die. He'd got absolutely drunk, crashed out in the middle of the road, across the road, and a car or a vehicle had come up and run over him, and he died. So that was my first dead body. But then after that I was posted to the Royalists for the second time, and the Royalists was in Reefort, just had a skeleton crew on board, and I was in charge of a couple of telegraphists that had the job of painting out a couple of offices. And that was a real sort of, you know, watching paintbrushes go up and down. So the communications
officer. So if you were in charge, they would do the painting, and you were painting as well, you were all painting.
I had to make sure that they were doing a proper job. But after a few days of this, I got really fed up and went into the communications officer's cabin, and I said to him, I would like to be considered for a posting to Urarangi. Oh, why? So I said, well, I'm about to do the full leading to telegraphist course. And after that, I'm staying on the Royalist. And I've already had a posting to the Royalist and sort of know the ship off by heart, having gone through the Suez crisis, etc. And I'd like to go to Urarangi for the extra experience I can get before I do a petty officer's course and get promoted to petty officer.
So what was special about Urarangi?
Because it was a shipshore radio station.
That's the one at Waiuru, is it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So eventually the posting came out for me to do my full leading to telegraphist course. So that meant I kept my hook on my arm, and on this arm, instead of having one star above the telegraphist badge, I had another star below it, which meant I was qualified for the leading to telegraphist. And then the next stage up, petty officer, if I qualified for petty officer telegraphist, the two stars would disappear and a crown would go above the, you know, just to show my qualifications. But when towards the end of the course, I was extremely pleased to see that I was not going to be posted back to the Royalist. I was going to be posted to Urarangi. So I was quite happy about this. But before shortly beforehand, or shortly before Christmas, that's right, and Jan and I had been married for about 8 months or so by then. No, we hadn't. We had been married for 14 months. We were allocated a Navy flat.
So you'd been married for that length of time.
Yeah.
Were you able to live together for much of that time? Or you
oh, yeah, 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 oh, okay. We had a flat at that time. All the time that I was on, most of the time I was on Canary Wheel. Yeah. We were married. Yes, we did. We got married when I was on the Canary, that's right. And, so I left Jan and the baby in the flat in Devonport. Went down to Wairoo, and then it was Christmas Eve. And I was allocated a house in Wairoo. Now, the houses in Wairoo were owned by the Army, and a certain number of them were allocated for Navy, married Navy personnel. So we've got a house there. So I got them down from Auckland, and over Christmas was Uruangi's busiest period every year. Because we were the South West Pacific Shipshore Station for mainly British and Commonwealth navies, and also for British merchant vessels. And when you've got a few cruise liners floating around, you've got thousands of passengers on each, they're all wanting to send telegrams back to England saying, oh, Happy Christmas or whatever, they came through us, as well as all the naval traffic. And when I say that we were the Shipshore Station for British and Commonwealth Navies, also United States Navy and United States Coast Guard used our facilities a lot. And what we did at each Christmas was have a competition. There were four watches, and we all had a competition of how many ships we could capture, and, you know. And the one that worked the most ships over a certain period of days got the crate of beer.
So you had your family down for Christmas, but then you were flat out at work. Was that well received? Or?
She was married to a Navy person. That's it. You didn't ask those sort of questions in those days.
Did she?
Very rare.
So she'd know what to expect when she got married, I suppose. Her father was a corporal in the army. Bear in mind
that the person that first introduced me
was a Navy bloke. Yes.
That lived just up the road in Nainai.
So Jan had a clear idea of what was involved.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Yes. Okay. And Dave was not a bloke to... He was a bit of a rough diamond, or very much a rough diamond. So she rapidly found out a lot about the Navy. And a lot of sailors at that time that were going down south on leave or whatever and back again, a lot of them called in there and stayed at night or whatever. So Jan's parents were well used to sailors.
Thank you for listening. Tune in next time for another episode.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.